Usually in teleconferences, I am either presenting material or I'm doing a Q&A teleconference where you're asking the questions and I'm giving the answers. Tonight, I'm not going to be providing any answers. By design, I'm asking the questions. And you're providing the answers. Hopefully over the last couple of days, or however long it's been since you registered for the program, you've been reviewing chapters 1 and 2 of Genesis, and in particular, you've been studying some specific verses that I asked you some very specific questions on. I hope you've been reviewing those verses, thinking about the questions, possibly sharing the questions and exploring answers with friends, family, colleagues. And tonight, we're going to noodle around these questions and your proposed answers to these questions. My role here is not to answer the question. My role here is really to kind of facilitate your answers. I'm going to ask you questions about your answers. I'm going to possibly challenge your answers. Possibly I will just say, oh, that's a good answer. So again, I want to be clear and I want to set the expectations as I think I already have, but I will not be really developing material or providing answers here tonight. We're going to be exploring this story and in particular specific questions I've asked about Adam and Eve and about the creation of man and about specific verses in Genesis chapters 1 and 2. And I'm very excited to see how you've analyzed these verses, how you've explored these questions, and what kind of answers you've come up with. Okay, first question. So in Genesis 1:27, it says, in the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. Which is it? Did God create him or them? Singular or plural? And how do you know based on the verses? So what do you think?
Well, you got me provoked. I have to say that. Made me think. So this is what I thought, and I never even really saw it before, but it's both, because God created him, as in singular, but male and female created them because Eve came out from Adam. So he actually created a physical body that then became two, him and her.
So that's interesting. Very good. My follow-up question to you, though, if that's the case, why is it repeated? In other words, the story that you're telling is really the story that the Bible tells in chapter 2 of Genesis. Right? We're here in chapter 1 where it says, God created man in his image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. And then I hope you have all had a chance to review these two chapters. So if you have, so you know that at the end of chapter 1, it's pretty clear that God finished creating the world, right? It says that God completed all of his work, and he rested on the seventh day, and it really, you know, it really, really brings conclusion to the creation of the world at the end of chapter 1. And then in chapter 2, we really get a different story of the creation of man. We're going to get a little bit more into this as we get into the other questions. But what you're sharing is what the Bible says in chapter 2 of Genesis, which is that God creates man, and then he takes a rib from him, and from that man he builds his mate, Eve. So I guess my follow-up question to you would be, if that's the case, then why is it repeated?
Well, I hate to answer what first comes to mind because I believe everything that God does is for a purpose. And I'm not second-guessing God, but maybe he fine-tuned things in the second chapter. And in other words, he enveloped it. He developed and expanded the original creation.
Very good. Interesting. So in chapter one, he gives us one verse that gives us like this, you know, from 20,000 feet, you know, here's how it happened. And then in chapter two, he goes into detail, more detail, about how that actually occurred. That's what you're saying.
Right. Because even in chapter one, he talks about being fruitful. I think.
That's correct. Be fruitful, multiply.
Right.
In chapter one.
So he had to expand on that for that to happen. So in chapter two, he then expands on how that's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
I like it. Okay. It's reasonable. It's reasonable. It fits with the verses. It's a nice contribution. Thank you.
Hello?
Hi there.
It's Kimberly.
Okay, Kimberly, what do you think?
So I was going to comment on the first question.
We're still on the first question. Mm-hmm.
And we're still on the first question. So I took it like I would when I was in school. Just answer that question. Was it them or was it him? And the verse is actually them. He created them, male and female. So that's what I took as the response, and on reflection, in the second...
Well, no, hold on one second. Let me just challenge you on that. I don't think what you just said is true, based on the verse. It says, God created man in his image. In the image of God, he created him.
Okay, the one I was looking at is he created them. Male and female, he created them.
Well, so let me read the whole verse. Did you have your Bible in front of you?
I actually was looking online. My Bible, my daughter has.
Okay, so here's the whole verse.
Okay.
God created man in his image. In the image of God, he created him.
Mm-hmm.
Male and female, he created them.
Okay, so that was 27. So that's not what
And that's exactly my question, which is, wait a second, which is it? Did he create him, singular, or did he create them, plural? That's the question.
Mm-hmm. I thought he created them, and that Adam came after to look after the Garden of Eden. Then he created Adam.
So how do you explain then... It says he created him, he meaning God, created him.
Well, like I said, when I read it, I didn't see that. I saw something else.
Right. Okay. So again, you don't have your Bible in front of you, but I have.
Right.
I do. We can't change the words of God. We can certainly talk about what they mean, but we can't change the words of
That's
God.
That's right.
So I'm telling
so I'd have
you here,
to reflect
I got my
on
Bible
that.
In front of me. It's reliable. By the way, you should all know, I should probably say, that, you know, of course, I was born in America and my first language is English, and we're going to do this whole class in English, and it could be that we never bring in another language. But I'm sure you realize that the Bible originally is written in Hebrew.
Right.
And anything we read in English is a translation. And anybody that knows anything about languages understands there's really no such thing as a translation. Every translation is actually an interpretation.
That's right.
So, you know, if there's ever any questions, I have here both the English and the Hebrew with me. I'm not going to discuss the Hebrew unless it's really necessary, but I do want you to know that while you're all reading in the English, I'm reading in the Hebrew, and that's because I want to be able to give you a literal translation of what it actually says. There are some translations, there are some Bibles, English Bibles, that have a very hard time with this verse. They don't quite know what to do with it. And sometimes they'll translate it in a way so it makes sense, but it's not actually true to the words. Because, again,
so
people don't know what to do with this. He created him, male and female, he created them. It doesn't make sense. But that is what it says.
So what I was reading was probably just that kind of interpretation.
That's exactly right. Sometimes you will find in quote translations that when they don't know what to do with things like this, they'll translate in a way that's convenient, so the reader doesn't say, what was that I just read? But what they just did was they just changed the Word of God, which is, of course, from a theological perspective, highly problematic.
Hello, this is Alex.
Okay, Alex, what do you think?
Well, maybe I'm just adding to what has already been said, but
it's okay.
I believe perhaps all three answers could be right. He created him in his image and her. And there is a verse where it says that both became one flesh. So I guess that would, them becoming one flesh is another separate creation in itself?
Well, again, I hope you had the chance to review chapters 1 and 2. The verse about them becoming one flesh, that occurs at the very end of chapter 2. It's actually the last verse in chapter 2. So we're going to get into this more as we get into the other questions, but I hope one of the things that you all realize, and I'll just repeat this because it's a really crucial point, one of the things you realized in reviewing these two chapters is that there are two completely different stories in the Bible about the creation of man. One occurs in chapter 1 and one occurs in chapter 2. And that's where some of these really compelling questions are coming from. So the verse that you're referring to where it says that, a man should leave his father and mother, bond to his wife, and they should become one flesh, that's the last verse in chapter 2 that talks about the creation of man in the second story, so to speak. So I'm not sure how that verse helps answer the question we're dealing with here in chapter 1, where, again, it says he created him, male and female. He created them. The question is, which is it? Did he create, one man or two? Are you saying that, and they shall become one flesh, are you saying that that verse means that they literally were one body?
I guess just from a philosophical standpoint, I was thinking of them as relating to the one flesh portion, even though perhaps I'm skipping ahead. That's where my mind went when I seen them.
Uh-huh. So still, I'm not sure about that, but let's go with that for a second. Let's say that's the case. How does that help us answer the question at hand? Did he create him, singular, or them, plural? They become one flesh. Are you saying then that that is singular?
If
that's what you're saying, my challenge would be, I don't think it really fits with the verses, because the story in chapter 2 clearly talks about God creating man, singular, right? He creates some dust from the earth. I'm skipping ahead now to chapter 2. Creates some dust from the earth. Clearly it's singular. Eve is not yet created, right? Because then we get the verses about how he puts man to sleep, and he takes the rib, he takes the rib from his side. From that rib, he builds Eve. He closes up the rib, and he brings her to him, and he says, this is flesh of my flesh and bone of my bones. I mean, clearly, in chapter 2, there's no doubt there that we're not talking about one person. We're talking about two physically different individuals. You are bringing up an interesting question, which is this verse at the end of chapter 2, which says a man shall leave his father and mother and bond with his wife, and they shall become one flesh. Almost everything I've ever read interprets that metaphorically, right? Become one flesh. I never heard any of the sages talk about how they sort of, they return to being physically one. It's an interesting thought, you know, what is the connection between them becoming one flesh at the end of chapter 2 and this verse in chapter 1 that we're talking about now, where it says that he created him, one, you know, one person, singular. It's an interesting question. I never heard that asked. I never heard any answers about it. What's the connection? My guess is that there's really not much of a connection, which is why I haven't heard much about it. But maybe not. Maybe I'm missing something. Anyway, very good. Thank you, Alex. Let's go on.
I've been studying the Bible since I was a kid, and we use the New World English Translation. And it's always been explained to me that chapter 1 is like an introductory chapter, in the sense that it kind of gives an overview of the work of God. And then chapter 2 gives it in more detail. So in answer to the question, was he created Adam, as you've been bringing out, and then later on, put him to sleep, and from Adam's rib created Eve.
You're fading out.
He did create both of them, but chapter 1 is an introduction and giving the whole review of creation, and then chapter 2 breaks it down into more of a detail of what God did.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's sort of like what Kimberly said, where it says he created him, male and female, he created them. She's saying that that's from 20,000 feet, that's an overview. First, he created him, singular, and then he split them, or made Eve from Adam, and then there were two. Is it any different than what Kimberly was saying at the beginning?
I don't know if she's reviewed chapter 1 as seeing it as an introduction and kind of an overall view of what, just, you know, what the creation was about, and then after chapter 2 goes into more specific details as to how God went about doing it.
Right. Okay, I hear what you're saying. That's interesting. I think it's a good point. I think it's valid.
I do believe it's the only book in the Bible that does have an introduction chapter, or like chapter 1. None of the other books in the Bible do that.
Mm-hmm. It's an interesting approach. I'll share with you just a challenge to the approach. Doesn't mean it's not a good approach, but a challenge to the approach is, I think what you're saying is similar to what Kimberly said, which is that this is an introduction, like you're saying, and then in chapter 2 we're going to delve into, you know, the details of sort of how some of this played out. The problem with that approach, or the challenge I have to that approach, is that chapter 1 and chapter 2 are not always consistent. In other words, if I'm going to write an introduction and then I'm going to continue to develop the ideas that I introduced, they're going to be consistent with one another. There shouldn't be inconsistencies. But in this case, there are some inconsistencies, I think. I'll just give you one example, and maybe as we go on I can think of some more, but I'll give you one example. In chapter 1, it says that God created man in his image. In the image of God, he created him. In chapter 2, it says that God created man dust from the earth. Now, these are very big verses where there's lots of discussion about them, lots of analysis. But I would challenge anybody to, you know, try to sort of reconcile those two ideas as being one and the same, or as being one as an introduction to the other. I would argue that being created in the image of God and being created dust from the ground is almost contradictory. Those are very, very different, the sort of modes of creation. Right, to be created in the image of God, at the point that we come across that verse, when we're told that man is created in the image of God, what do we know about God? We only know one thing about God at that point, which is that he's a creator. And that's part of what it means to be created in the image of God, is that he gave us creative abilities. That means power. And in fact, and I'm giving you part of the answer to one of the other questions I want to explore, and in fact, almost immediately after we're created in the image of God, we're given the command to dominate the earth, to rule over all the animals, the fish and the sea, the birds and the earth. And many of the sages interpret that to mean that we're responsible for being creative, meaning to build the world, to create it. That's why people run the risk of slipping into arrogance, of having their ego take over their life, because there is a part of each and every one of us that feels powerful, that feels strong, that feels creative, that feels important, because, in fact, we are created in the image of God, and that is awesome. But on the other hand, we are created dust from the earth, right? That's like the exact opposite. I'm a piece of dirt. I'm a speck of dust. And that dust and that earth comes from the ground, which is physical, limiting. Being created in the image of God is spiritual and unlimited. So this is just an example. I'm just giving you an example of, while it sounds like a nice approach, and I think it's legitimate, I think it's valid, I think it does answer some questions. I don't know if it's foolproof, though. And again, the problem I have is that there are certain contradictions between Chapter 1 and Chapter 2, and I just gave you one example. Let's put out there the second question. Shortly after man is created in Genesis 1:27, God gives him two commands. What are they?
This is Scott. They were to be fruitful and become many, fill the earth and subdue it.
Excellent. So just to break that down. So the first one is to be fruitful and multiply.
Mm-hmm.
And the second one is?
Fill the earth and subdue it.
Well, fill the earth, I would suggest that that's the same as being
fruitful
and multiply.
Yep.
Right. So the second one, I think, you got it. The second one is to subdue it. And what's it?
The earth.
The earth, exactly. And that's what I was just talking about a moment ago. And not only to subdue it, but then it says immediately after that word subdue, and it says to rule over the fish of the sea, the birds of the heavens, and all of the things that crawl on the earth. So I would suggest, and many of the great sages talk about how to subdue the earth and to rule over the animals of the earth is kind of the second command. It's kind of one and the same. The point there is that we are supposed to be creative, to subdue it, to rule over it, to dominate it, to control it, that man has dominion over the earth. Excellent. Okay, Scott. Thank you. While I have you on, did you have anything else you wanted to add?
Well, just going back to question one, but doesn't 2:4 also, Genesis 2:4 also have something in there about the history of the heaven? This is the history of heaven and earth and how they were created, which sort of, I'm going to jump on the 20,000 feet up syllabus bandwagon, and that's how I read one also. But
so... What are you saying about, so in chapters 2:4, it says, these are the generations, the heavens and the earth, when they were created, in the day that God made the earth and the heavens. Now, what's your point about that verse?
My point about that is that even though it wasn't titled the beginning of chapter 2, that it was effectively like a summation saying that, hey, this is what happened, and then from there, now we're going to go on to something deeper.
Right. You make a great point. It is interesting that's chapter 2, verse 4. From an organizational point of view, it really should be chapter 2, verse 1. I agree with you. Because chapter 2, verse 1, where it says, the heavens and the earth were finished and all of their complements, and God finished on the seventh day his work that he did, and he rested on the seventh day from all of his work that he did, and God blessed the seventh day, and he sanctified it, because on it he rested from all the work that he created to do. And that really feels like the end of the first story of creation. That feels like the end of chapter one, even though that really is the beginning of chapter two. And what Scott is saying, and I agree 1,000%, is that this next verse, which is, these are the generations of the heavens and the earth, with all of their complements on the day that God made the heavens and the earth, that really feels like an introduction to the next part of the Bible. That really feels like an introduction to chapter 2. I agree with you. It's an interesting point. By the way, you should know that the divisions in the Bible, chapters and verses, is a man-made thing, right? So that's important to know, right? When you see chapters and verses divided, that's not the Word of God. It's that organizational structure is not from God. That was made by us, made by man. That's not to say that it's not helpful, but it's, I think, just important to know where it came from. So next is, in Genesis 2:5, it says, there was not yet man to work the ground. Really? What about chapter 1, verse 27, where it says, God created man in his image, in the image of God he created him, male and female he created them. What does it mean that it wasn't yet man to work the ground? And by the way, this is another great example. It seems to me it can't be that chapter 2 is just an elaboration of chapter 1. Chapter 1 clearly says that God created man. Well, we can argue about whether it was 1, whether it was 2, singular or plural, but you know, man was created. Then in chapter 2:5 it says man wasn't even there. You know, how do we reconcile that? Similarly, Genesis 2:7 describes the creation of man as if he hadn't been created yet. 2:7, let's just refer back to that. God created man, dust from the earth, and he breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living being. So there, that's as clear a description of the creation of man as you can get. A second time, a very different type of creation. So anyway, but man was created in 127. Why does the Bible say that man wasn't created when we know based on chapter 1, verse 27, that he was? Why does the Bible give us two accounts of the creation of man?
Hello.
Yes, sir.
I want to touch on, I think it was good that we touched on that man and woman coming out of Adam. I have to say I went and looked at the Hebrew a little bit behind this, and the word him is Adam, and the male word is Zakar. So the way I think some of the people already mentioned this, that it was a man, him included man and woman, and then male and female, are kind of a breakdown of that, or that's what came out of.
Try me again on it. I didn't quite follow you. I think maybe you've got something interesting, but I didn't totally understand it. Explain it a little bit more.
Well, they're two different words. So the word for him, where God created him, is Adam. And
is
then
what?
Male and female, he created them. Is
Wait. Him is the word is what?
Adam.
Are you saying in the Hebrew?
Yeah.
No, that's not true.
The word is
Oto.
Okay.
I'm not sure what Hebrew version of the Bible you're looking at, but no, the word for him in Hebrew in this verse is Oto.
Okay. I must have looked at the wrong thing.
Yeah.
But anyway, on the other question with regard to, you were mentioning about the man was made out of the dust of the ground, and then I think you touched on that just recently, that God breathed the breath of life into him. I think that's where the image of God was really, that's what differentiated us from the animals in creation, was the breath of God. Just the dust of the ground, we'd be just like the animals.
So you're drawing a comparison between being created in the image of God, which is the language used in chapter 1, and he breathed into him the breath of life, which is the language used in chapter 2. You're saying that breath of life that he breathed into him is the image of God that was referred to in chapter 1.
Right, because that's where it comes from, the self-consciousness and the things that the animals don't have. It differentiates us from the animals.
Very nice. Very nice. Okay, good. After the second account of the creation of man, God gives man another command. What was it?
This is Kent. This is one I don't know, actually. I was just actually trying to see if I could find it.
Okay.
So I had a comment on the earlier question.
If you intended to comment about something else, feel free.
Sure. Okay, well, I'll go back to the verse about God creating man, and I'm wondering, I was looking at an interlinear with the Hebrew, is it possible that when he says he created man, he's talking about mankind? And
well, are you in chapter man, 1 now, 127?
Chapter 1, yeah, verse 27. So verse 26 says, God says us, let us make man in our image.
Uh-huh.
And so, I mean, my theology, that would be God the Father, the Son, and the Spirit.
Mm-hmm.
God has those characteristics, and that as we reflect his image, it takes both male and female to reflect that. So God created mankind in his image, but the fullness of mankind is male and female.
Very nice. Very nice, Kent. So where it says that God created man in his image, in the image of God, he created him. The him in the singular there is a reference to mankind. Male and female, he created them, is a reference to Adam and Eve, and the husband and the wife, the man and the woman, that represents that mankind. Did I understand you correctly?
Yes. So, humanity. So, basically, humanity's reflection of the image of God is only complete in there's something spiritual when a man and woman enter into a covenant relationship that reflects back a more perfect reflection of the image of God. And that as myself, I don't do that. But when I'm in covenant with my wife and healthy, we reflect that back, especially to our children.
Beautiful.
I know that's not in the verse, but I understand it
that way. Beautiful, beautiful. I love it. I'll tell you what I love about it, too. We can tie it into the discussion we've had about man being created in the image of God. What does it mean to be created in the image of God? The only thing we know about God at that point in the Torah is that he's creative. And so to be created in the image of God means to be creative. What's the ultimate act of creation for man?
Creating progeny.
That's exactly it. Which happens between a man and a woman. When a man and a woman creates, you know, when they are creative in the ultimate sense, when they create life, they are being like God. God created life. And when a man and a woman create life, they are acting in the image of God.
I hadn't actually thought of it that way. That's interesting.
No, you did think of it. It was your idea.
Well, no, but in terms of the actual, like the procreation part of it, I was thinking more in the spiritual sense that we reflect back and that we're creators of beauty and the whole aspect of our creative natures reflect God's image. But actually, the fact that we participate in God's creation of a new generation and that reflects his image is a fascinating nuance on it.
Yeah. Great. Beautiful. Thank you for your contribution. The question again is, if you want to deal with it, after the second account of the creation of man, God gives man another command. What was it?
Hi, Mott. This is Veena here.
Hello, Veena.
I was actually reflecting on the first question, and I know the previous speaker has already addressed it, but what I felt was, when creation takes place with God in mind, I think he talks about his image in terms of spirit. And when he talks spirit, it's male and female energies coming together. So when he created, the first part of the creation was in his own image, where he refers to the male and female energies coming together in creation. But later on, in chapter 2, he realized he needs to embody that spirit to make it manifest on earth.
I'm not sure.
Hello?
I follow you. I was thinking. I'm not sure I understand your point. Try me again.
The first part of creation in the image of God refers to spiritual creation, where he refers to the energies of male and female coming together into the universe, his spirit.
God creates man in his image, in the image of God he created him, male and female he created them. You're saying
that's
not actually referring to the creation of a person, but it's referring to...
Yeah, that's not the embodiment of the spirit. It's the spirit in itself. Whereas in chapter 2, he talks about manifesting the spirit in the body because he needed someone to help Adam go ahead and work the land.
Mm-hmm.
In the first chapter, in verse 28, it says, "And God blessed them, and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it." He's referring to the spirit that he had already created in his image. But when he creates Adam in the second chapter, he takes the dust off the earth and embodies the spirit into that earthly being.
So chapter 1 is spiritual. Chapter 2, it becomes physical.
Yeah. In chapter 2, God realizes he needs to give that spirit a body to work the earth.
Mm-hmm. It's an interesting idea. Can you offer any, I want to use the word proof, I don't mean literally, but can you offer any sort of compelling logic? Can you point me to a verse or something that would that would support that interpretation?
Okay, let us look at chapter 1, verse 26. Then God said, "Let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the heavens and over the livestock and over all the earth and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth." Now, physically, a human cannot have control over everything living unless it's of a powerful energy. Then it goes on to say in verse 27, "So God created man in his own image," referring to his power, "and in the image of God he created him. Male and female he created them." So now he's talking him, and he is qualifying what him meant was male and female. He created them, as in the energies, the power that is required to be able to subdue the life all over earth. When he goes on to chapter 2, it refers to the fact where God is now talking about how the earth will manifest itself. And so he creates fields, he creates the rivers, because then he realizes you need water to work the land. Mm-hmm. And, of course, he also informs Adam that he's giving him every seed for life to grow on earth. And that's when he realizes that just the power of male and female in the image of God cannot manifest on earth through Adam. Because Adam is atypically the male force. And you need the female force to come together to balance the universe.
So if we interpret chapters 1 and 2 in the way you're describing, it's interesting. How would you explain the fact that in the prior verses in chapter 1, it seems to be talking very clearly about a physical creation? I mean, in chapters, on day 1, God says, "Let there be light," and there was light, and then he creates the sky and the heavens, and then he creates the land and the water, and then the stars and the moon and the galaxies.
Right.
You know, and then he creates the birds and the fish, and then he creates the animals. It seems to be, unless you're going to offer a different interpretation, it seems to be, that's all in chapter 1 prior to 127, it seems to be speaking about a physical creation.
Not really. Up to verse 24, he's talking physical in terms of the beings on earth other than mankind.
I see. Okay, and you want to say that when it gets to 24, you want to say that it switches to a spiritual
after
creation.
After verse 24, it switches to bringing in the life form that is going to rule over earth. So in verse 26, it says, "Then God said, let us make man in our image, after our likeness." So if you talk about the likeness of the image of God, it is virtually spirit.
Okay, very interesting. So I see that you seem to be struggling with this, what is it, the fourth question. It's really much easier than I think you realize it could be that I didn't formulate the question so well. First, let me clarify the question. A command, at least as I'm using the word, doesn't have to be something that you do. I could command you not to do something. So the answer to the question, I think you all know it, it's pretty obvious. After the second account of the creation of man, God gives man the command not to eat from the tree of knowledge of good and evil. That's the answer to the fourth question. God commanded man, saying, from all the trees of the garden you shall eat, but the tree of knowledge of good and evil, do not eat from it, because on the day that you eat from it, you will surely die. So that's the answer to the fourth question. Okay, let's go on to the fifth question. Verse 218 says, it's not good for man to be alone. And then the Bible goes on to describe the creation of Eve. But was man alone? What about male and female? He created them in chapter 127. How do you reconcile it's not good that man is alone with the earlier verse that says male and female, he created them? Right? In other words, the Bible says in 127, male and female, he created them. Seems to be a pretty strong indication that there's two, male and female. And yet, later on, it says it's after the second account of the creation of man, it says it's not good that man is alone, which is followed by the creation of Eve. But what do you mean it's not good that man is alone? Male and female, he created them. Why is he alone? In 2:7, God creates man. Then there are 10 verses until it's not good for man to be alone. What took so long? Why doesn't the Bible say that it's not good for man to be alone as soon as he was alone? In other words, man is created, dust from the ground. Then God makes the Garden of Eden. He makes the four rivers running through it. He then gives man the command not to eat from the tree of knowledge of good and evil. 10 verses. Again, I hope you've had a chance to review them so you know what I'm referring to. And then finally, it's not good for man to be alone. What changed for man that made it not good for him to be alone? Why did it take 10 verses? Why did it take so long for that statement to come out? Why wasn't it that God created man dust from the earth, breathed into him the breath of life, and he became a living soul, and it's not good for man to be alone? And boom, into the story of creation of Eve. So that's my question.
He said it's not good for man to be alone because that's when Adam realized, after God had created every animal, that every animal had a partner.
The problem with
and
that...
And he was the only one that
did not have one like him. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but let me interrupt you and try to get you back on track. The problem with that explanation is that it says it's not good for man to be alone before God introduces Adam to the animals and he names them. So you've got the order of things backwards,
right?
You want to say that, and that would make sense, by the way.
Yeah.
In a sense, it would make sense that God would bring him the animals, he would name them, and then he would feel alone because, you know, none of these are for me. And then it's not good for man. That's just not the way the Bible was written. It says it's not good for man to be alone. Then he gets to meet the animals.
Well, then it's because we get in chapter one. As it has been said, that from the beginning, that was his intent, to have men and female. So when he breathed the life into the man of the dust that he created, the flesh, he realized he needed the woman so that he can have the male and the female.
So I'm not sure how I don't understand how that answers the question. why is there so much time and space and verses between the creation of man and the statement that it's not good for man to be alone? Why wasn't it not good for man to be alone as soon as he was alone?
Right.
Why does God then make the Garden of Eden, he makes the four rivers running through it, he gives him the command not to eat from the tree of knowledge of good and evil? 10 verses. It's a lot. And then finally, it's not good for man to be alone. What took so long?
I don't know, I guess, like the lady said, we can know everything, you know, this is God. But I would think that from the beginning, that was the intent of God, creating man and female, and he's just bringing to light the truth that it's just not good for the man to be alone. He wants the female.
I'm not questioning whether or not it's good for man to be alone. If God says it's not good for man to be alone, I believe him. My question is, what took so long? Why wasn't it good for man to be alone as soon as he was alone? What's the significance of the Garden of Eden being created, the four rivers running through it, then God giving him the command not to eat from the tree of knowledge of good and evil, and then finally, it's not good for man to be alone?
Hello?
Yes?
This is Elaine. I'm sorry.
Hi,
you were talking after it said I can finally answer my question. So I wanted to go back just a little bit and then come forward to where you are now.
No problem.
When you discussed regarding the thought of making God in their image, it says, let us make man in our image. And the thought that I have on that, it says, possess mental powers and the abilities far superior than any other earthly creature. Made in the likeness of the grand creator, Adam had the divine attributes of love, wisdom, justice, and power. Hence, he possessed the Hence, he possessed a sense of morality involving a conscience of something altogether new in the sphere of earthly life. So the animals or nothing else possessed that, and that's why he's created. And it says in the likeness of God, but it did bring out that he is brought up from the dust. Like you said, we're all dust. If you do any kind of science, we have minerals and all that in us. But he can still have the divine attributes of love, wisdom, justice, power, and so forth, which makes him superior, obviously, to any of the other creation of God. That was my thought on that. And then my other thought was when it says that he was alone in chapter 2, verse 15, after it talks about the 9, it talks about the ground and all the things popping out of the ground, the earth, the tree of life, and the garden of good, bad, so forth, and the rivers. And so that God proceeded to take the man and settle him in the Garden of Eden, in verse 15, to cultivate it and take care of it. So he had a work to do already. And so there was a lot of time to take from what God already created and expand it out. It would be like us expanding our garden out. And he had a lot of work to do in that aspect. And then later on, you know, he realizes, looking down, that it's not good for man to be alone.
Are you saying, Elaine, that it's not good for man to be alone because he has work to do and needs help in the garden?
He needs a helper, right?
If that's an interesting approach, I just have one question. If that's the case, then why doesn't the verse say, 2:15, God took the man, put him in the Garden of Eden to work it and to protect it? And then it should have said, it's not good for man to be alone. If the cause and effect is it's not good for man to be alone because he's got to work and protect this garden and needs help, then why didn't it say, work and protect the garden, it's not good for man to be alone? But unfortunately for your explanation, that's not the way it goes. After the working to keep the garden, now God commands man, all the trees of the garden you can eat, but the tree of knowledge of good and evil you shall not eat, because when the day you eat from it, you will die. And then God says, it's not good for man to be alone. So what do you make of that extra verse in there? Do you understand my challenge?
I think I understand your challenge, and the only way I can address it at this point is that he put it in the garden, like he said, settled him in the garden to cultivate it and to take care of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm sure he was watching him work and so forth, and, you know, I'm sure there was, if he's created in God's image, he would want to have some kind of communication and so forth, and that kind of intimacy with somebody. And so then God saw that desire within Adam and saw fit to then turn around and create Eve from Adam.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. I actually thought of an answer to my challenge. I have a way you could answer the question. Would be that God said to Adam, put them in the Garden of Eden and to work it and to protect it. What does it mean to work it and protect it? Ah, what it means is you can eat from all of these trees, but don't eat from that one, because on the day you eat from that one, you will die. So in other words, the two verses are, one could say that the two verses are, the second one's expanding upon the first one. The first one's kind of general, work it and protect it. And the next verse, where God gives the command not to eat from the tree of knowledge of good and evil, is elaborating, you could even say it's elaborating in particular on what it means to protect it. What does it mean to protect the garden? It means particularly that tree over there, don't eat from it. Okay, now that we've established the work that you've got to do in the garden, you want to say he needs help doing that, so it's not good for man to be alone.
That sounds good.
Okay. Yeah.
Hi.
Hi there.
It's Carol. Okay. So one of the ways I think it can be looked at is possibly God thought man would find companionship with one of the animals because he let Adam name them, know them, and it after that part, he realizes that no companion was found. And then maybe the idea of a connection between man and woman became more obvious.
Uh-huh. So what question are you answering, or are you just...
I'm answering the question, why did 10 verses go on,
and then it's... Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, and then it's being addressed again. You know, it's addressed at first, it's not good for him to be alone, and then it's left, and all these other things happen before God brings up again, it's not good for him to be alone, and creates Eve. In the meantime, you know, all this other work of the rivers and everything is done, and the animals are brought to life and, you know, come before Adam to name. And then there's a statement. Let me see if I can find it. Um, 220 is in... The man gives names to all the cattle and to the birds of the sky and all the wild beasts, but for Adam, no fitting helper was found. So in that time period, they were looking to find something that he would not be alone with.
But God's statement that it's not good for man to be alone came before that, right?
Right, and then it's left. All this other stuff is done, and maybe God thought that he would find a companion some other way. And then after meeting all the animals and the birds and the fish, whatever, everything else that's on earth, there was no fitting helper or companion. And then it goes on to creating Eve.
Mm-hmm. So are you answering the question here? And it's okay if you're not. It's okay if you're just making a nice point. Because I hear one point I hear you're making, which I think is strong, which is that the process of meeting all of these other animals and recognizing that none of these are like me kind of lays the groundwork for Adam realizing that that he is alone and appreciating Eve, who is about to come to him. Right? It's kind of like, you know, I don't think anybody marries the first person they meet. You know, most people have, you know, some other dating experiences. And to some extent, it's those, you know, some of those dating experiences, realizing what you don't want, you know, helps you clarify and appreciate what you do want when you find it.
Right, like the search of, like, the animals couldn't be a soulmate. They couldn't fulfill what he really wanted and needed.
Right, but are you, so I appreciate that point very much. I think there's, you know, I think it's right on, and I think there's something important to learn from it. Are you also, though, trying to answer the question of why, if it's not good for man to be alone, why wasn't it not good for man to be alone as soon as he was alone? In other words, are you also answering the question of why wasn't it not good for man to be alone as soon as he was created?
Again, I think it's an evolving story. It's something that is built upon everything else. So it wasn't thought of in depth. Even though the man should not be alone was recognized and verbalized, there were still other things, or maybe, you know, it was an evolving story and all these other things just had to happen before it became time to create Eve, to really fulfill, you know, what's meant to be, what God's image of mankind should be.
Okay. Okay, very good. Let's go on to the seventh question. I put the last one out there. And again, we can come back to all of these. We have more time. For this question, too, isolate the account of the creation of man in chapter 2. Why is it not good that man is alone? Try not to get philosophical. Try to provide an answer based on the verses. Why does Adam need a wife? I guess we've already touched on this to some extent, but I wanted to put it out there. Now we have all the questions out there.
This is Scott again.
Okay, Scott.
It's not good for man to be alone because man would not be able to comply with God's command of being fruitful and filling the earth and subduing it by himself.
Excellent.
He needs to have a woman to actually comply with being created in God's image.
Very good, Scott. Well said. Just a follow-up question to that. In chapter 1, male and female, he created them. Mm-hmm. They weren't alone, which is why, and, you know, I try to be very purposeful in my writing and in my questions. You notice in the question, I said, for this question, isolate the account of creation of man in chapter 2. In other words, put aside, forget for a second, the creation of man in chapter 1, which is the creation story that you're focusing on, where he gets the command to be fruitful and multiply and to subdue the earth. So you're explaining a verse in chapter 2 with a verse in chapter 1, which I appreciate it. I like it. Okay. But the problem with that is that it seems that there are two different accounts of the creation of man, and particularly in the creation of the account of the creation of man in chapter 1, one could easily argue, we've talked about a lot of different approaches here, many of which are valid, but one could easily argue that in chapter 1, he wasn't alone. Male and female, he created them. And it makes sense that he gets the command to be fruitful and multiply because he needs a wife to do that, and to fill the earth, and to subdue the earth, to dominate it. You know, that's a lot of work. I could certainly use some help, so I like what you're saying there. But then in chapter 2, it says, it's not good that man is alone. So if we isolate the creation story in chapter 2, if for a moment, if you would humor me, and we could accept that there are two different stories of the creation of man, one in chapter 1 and one in chapter 2, then in the story in chapter 2, why is it not good for man to be alone?
I feel that Adam fell that man may be, and the reason why he was not to be alone is so that they could procreate. We wouldn't, it was all part of God's plan, the plan of salvation.
So you're saying, well, I mean, everything's part of God's plan, that goes without saying. You're saying that it's not good for man to be alone so that he could be fruitful and multiply.
Right. That was the commandment.
Yeah.
That was the commandment. We wouldn't be here if that didn't happen.
Mm-hmm. Okay. True. This is not to refute anything you're saying. However, we talked about this a little bit already. That command to be fruitful and multiply occurred in chapter 1 when presumably man was not alone. Remember, male and female, he created them. And then they get the command to be fruitful and multiply. In chapter 2, we get a different story of the creation of man. It appears as though man is created alone. Not appears as though. He is created alone, because we know that Eve is created later. And in between, we get the verse, it's not good for man to be alone. And between the creation of man and it's not good for man, and it's not good for man to be alone, are 10 verses.
He has to fulfill the commandment. And they have to eat of the tree of good and evil, so that then they're cast out of the Garden of Eden. And they're in a state of innocence in the Garden of Eden.
Mm-hmm.
And they're cast out. And that's part of the plan, that Adam had to fall so that man may be.
So if that was part of the plan, then why did God tell them not to do it? Was God trying to get them to spoil his plan?
Because Eve partook of the fruit, then Adam also had to partake of the fruit.
Why did he have to? Because she did? Why couldn't he say, you made a mistake, I'm not going there?
Because then they can't procreate. And mankind cannot exist if they don't.
Why couldn't they procreate? Why couldn't she eat from the tree? He said, you made a mistake, I'm not going there, and they could still procreate, no?
Not in the state of innocence the way they were. They didn't know good from bad, or they didn't know...
Hmm.
They had to be cast out.
So once she ate from it, he had to eat from it in order to fulfill the command.
Absolutely.
It's interesting. There's actually, I've heard some commentary on to support your argument there. The verse actually says, so they eat from the tree, he eats from the tree also, then they hide, and they're afraid, and they're naked, and, you know, God says to them, what did you do? The man said, the woman that you gave to be with me, the woman that, not just the woman, but the woman that you gave to be with me, she gave me the fruit and I ate it.
Right.
So in other words, Adam's arguing to God,
right?
You gave me this woman to be with me.
Right.
She ate from the tree in
right.
order for me to be with her, which was your wish. You gave her to me to be with her.
Right.
She ate from the tree. Now I have to eat from it too in order to be with her.
Exactly.
So what you're saying is not only an interesting idea, but it's actually, you can read it into the verses, which I think you can tell at this point, which I love. I think that, you know, we're working here with the Word of God. If we're going to say something, I like it, I prefer it when you can actually support it with something in the verses. So what you're saying is supported in the verse. That's a great idea.
Okay, so I'd like to go to that one part where you said, I forget the whole thing, but it was saying about why was Adam considered to be alone. It says,
that he was in a paradise, and of course he had all the vegetation and everything around him, and he had the animals and so forth. And all around Adam were peaceful animals and every kind of description, but Adam was alone because there was no other creature according to his kind which could talk. So he recognized that that was not good
for him. Are you reading from a translation?
I'm reading from something that I wrote, yes.
Oh, okay. Something you wrote, or it's a translation?
Right. No, it's from an insight from on the scriptures.
Okay, fine. Go ahead.
So the whole part of why Adam was considered to be feeling alone is because he saw everything else that was created, had a mate, male, female, and so forth. But there was no one else like him. The animals couldn't talk. So that's why God went ahead and, it said that there was no other creature according to his kind that could talk. And in reference back to the previous person who was talking about the tree, we as parents will maybe have everything on the table as far as food goes for our kids, but we would give them an instruction to say, of everything here on the table you can have, all that you want to eat except this, let's say this tree right here. Now, God created them in his image in the sense that they could make decisions on their own. They weren't robots or anything like that. They could make their own choices and their own decisions. And along with that was the decision to, are you going to obey God or not? And the obeying of God would be, thus, that's my tree, the knowledge of good and bad. Don't touch it. That belongs to me. I'm giving you everything you need here, along with freedom of choice. Then, of course, the woman was created for him. And she herself was told by Adam what God had said about that tree. And, of course, she was deceived by the serpent, as it said in verse 3. It says, to this the woman replied, the serpent, it deceived me, so I ate. But then in chapter 3, verse 17, it said, and to Adam he said, meaning God, because you listened to your wife's voice and took to eating of the tree concerning which I gave you this command, you must not eat from it. And he goes on and complains about how he was being cursed to the ground. So each of them are separate individuals that can make their own choices, whether to serve God or not serve God. And if, in this instance, Eve did eat of the fruit, disobedience to God, Adam still could have made that choice not to, knowing that the power that God had to give him a woman to begin with, he could have very well have reproduced another woman for him as a companion. He didn't have to go along with the eating of the tree or disobedience to God just to be able to procreate, knowing that God had that kind of power to do that. He's already seen what kind of work that God could do. So he didn't have to go along with it just to be fulfilling that. I mean, that's like,
that's a very interesting point.
Everything about God is good, so he was not going to turn around and say, well, I gave you something good, and she on her own did something bad, so I'm not going to replace that or anything like that. I mean, it's just...
So it's a very interesting point. The previous caller wanted to argue, which I thought was a good point as well, that, at the point that she ate from it, he had to eat from it too, because he commanded her. God commanded him to be with her, and so as soon as she ate from it, they had to be together, and they had to be fruitful and multiply. And so, in order to fulfill that command, he had to eat from it. But that's human logic. Like, that makes sense to us. I like what you're saying. What you're saying is that might make sense to us, but that's not what God told us to do. And sometimes, we just have to, it may not make sense. We may not be able to see how we're going to get from here to there, but that's part of what it means to have faith is, this is what I'm supposed to do. I don't quite understand how this is going to work out for me, but that's what it means to believe in God and the power of his powers, which are beyond nature and logic. that's what I'm supposed to do, that I'm going to do it, and I'll trust that he's going to figure out some other way for me to be fruitful and multiply. If he created her once, he can create her again or somebody else. I hear what you're saying. I think from a religious point of view, it's a very compelling argument. There's truly something to learn from it, because whether or not it's true in the verses, you know, I don't know, but I like what you're saying because I think theologically speaking, it's absolutely true. And this is one of the reasons why so many people struggle with being faithful to the Word of God, because very often it doesn't make sense to us. It's not logical. We can't figure out how this is going to work out. But that's exactly what it means to have faith.
Well, same instance with Job. I mean, he lost everything, and then God turned around and, because of his faithfulness, gave him double. You know, he blessed him again. But he had to have faith that God could do that.
Right. But what about the story? I hear you. I appreciate that. I like, you know, bringing Job into it is interesting. But what about all the stories where somebody was faithful and it didn't work out?
What didn't work out in...
It didn't work out, meaning that you brought up Job where, you know...
Like David when he had relations and then lost the baby. Not always is it going to work out to the advantage of the way that man thinks it should, but maybe God has a will. His will is his plan.
Very nice. Very nice. I think that's a strong point. Just another way of saying that, making that same point, another way to answer the question that I'm asking is to sort of redefine success, redefine works out. A person of true, deep faith, as soon as I listen and obey, it's worked out. Right? You see what I'm saying? In other words, a person of deep faith that really believes the end is for me to listen. That's it. That's the point. That's why I'm here. As soon as I've done that, it's worked out. That's the result I was going after the whole time. Now, I could also be experiencing pain. Okay, that's might be disappointing and painful, but it worked out, because ultimately the goal and the point is not for me to have any particular outer success or accomplishment or result, but the journey of my life is the building of my insides. It's the patterns of my choices and what they represent. It's the sort of the wake of values that I leave in my choices. In other words, the trophy is who I become, not in what's the circumstances around me. And as soon as you frame it that way, you've really redefined success. You've really redefined the outcome or the result you're looking for. And God didn't need to bless Job with double. As soon as he obeyed and maintain his faith, he won. Powerful way to look at life. It's challenging, but powerful.
This is Scott again. I have nothing. That was really, really, really motivating and inspirational. Thanks for sharing that.
You're very welcome.